Hello, and welcome to In the News. I'm Chris. I'm Rick Anderson, and today I'll be reading selected stories from the New York Times Science Edition of June 5th, 2024. Our first story says, a new search for ripples in space from the beginning of time. As it studies cosmic microwaves, the Simons Observatory in Chile aims to help prove or disprove cosmic inflation, a notion that the universe expanded rapidly in the moment of the Big Bang. The story is by Kenneth Chiang. The universe burst into existence 13.8 billion years ago. What happened in that earliest moment is of intense interest to anyone trying to understand why everything is the way it is today. I think this question of what happens at the beginning of the universe is a profound one, said David Spergel, president of the Simons Foundation, a non-profit organization that supports research at the frontiers of mathematics and science. And what is remarkably exciting to me is the fact that we can do observations that can give us insight into this. A new $110 million observatory in the high desert of northern Chile, $90 million financed by the foundation, could uncover key clues about what happened after the Big Bang by looking at particles of light that have traveled across the universe since almost the beginning of time. The data could provide a compelling corroboration for a fantastical idea known as cosmic inflation. It holds that in the first sliver of time, after the universe's birth, the fabric of space-time accelerated outwards to speeds far faster than the speed of light. Alternatively, the observatory's measurements could undercut this hypothesis, a pillar in the current understanding of cosmology. The observatory is named after the foundation and its founders. Jim Simons, the hedge fund billionaire and philanthropist who died on May 10th, and his wife Marilyn, a trained economist. Two of four telescopes began taking measurements in April in time for Dr. Simons' 86th birthday on April 25th. That was sort of the target that Jim set long ago for project completion, Dr. Spergel said. And we got there. Perched amid a majestically barren landscape at an altitude of 17,000 feet, the observatory has three small telescopes with a passing resemblance to ice cream cones, and a larger one that consists of a pointable box, something that looks like a cousin to a Star Wars droid. The telescopes gather microwaves, wavelengths longer than visible light, but shorter than radio waves. Two of the smaller telescopes are already gathering data. The third will join in a few months, and the fourth, much larger, will begin operations next year. About 60,000 detectors in the four telescopes will then study a cosmic glow of microwaves that fill the universe. It's a unique instrument, said Suzanne Staggs, a professor of physics at Princeton University and co-director of the Simons Observatory. We just have so many detectors. For the first 380,000 years of the universe's infancy, temperatures were so high that hydrogen atoms could not form, and photons, particles of light, bounced off charged particles, continually absorbed and emitted. But as soon as hydrogen could form, the photons could travel unimpeded. The photons have cooled to just a few degrees above absolute zero, and their wavelengths have stretched into the microwave part of the spectrum. The cosmic microwave background was first observed half a century ago, a serendipitous hiss picked up by an antenna in Holmdel, New Jersey. In the 1990s, a NASA satellite, the Cosmic Background Explorer, revealed tiny temperature ripples within the cosmic microwaves, fingerprints pointing to what the early universe looked like. The fluctuations reflected variations in the universe's density, and the denser regions would later coalesce into galaxies and even larger scale structures of superclusters of galaxies, lining up like a cosmic spider web. The Simons Observatory aims to tease out more details, swirling patterns of polarized light that cosmologists call B-modes in the microwaves. Alan Guth, a professor of Massachusetts Institute of Technology, proposed the idea of cosmic inflation 45 years ago, in part to explain the bland homogeneity of the universe. No matter in what direction you look, no matter how far out you look, everything in the cosmic microwave background looks pretty much the same. But the observable universe is so large that there is not enough time for a photon to travel all the way across to equalize temperatures everywhere. But a rapid stretching of space-time inflation could have accomplished that, even though it would have ended when the universe was less than a trillionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second old. Current cosmological observations fit with the cosmic inflation picture, said Brian Keating, a professor of physics at the University of California, San Diego, and one of the leaders for the project. But, Dr. Keating added, to date, there's no smoking gun. The accelerating expansion would have generated titanic gravitational waves that would have jostled matter in a way that would have imprinted B-modes among the primordial microwave radiation. The B-modes, those waves of gravity percolating throughout the cosmos, would be tantamount to the smoke from the gun, Dr. Keating said. For the B-modes, the scientists will examine a property of light known as polarization. Light consists of electric and magnetic fields that oscillate at right angles to each other. Usually, these fields are oriented in random directions, but when light reflects off certain surfaces, the fields can be knocked into alignment or polarized. Polarization of light can be studied with a filter through which only part of the light polarized in a particular direction will pass. Well, that's how polarized sunglasses suppress glare. When sunlight reflects off water, it becomes polarized, similar to how light in the early universe became polarized. The detectors at the observatory consist, in essence, of spinning polarized filters. If the microwaves were unpolarized, then the brightness of the microwaves would remain constant. If they were polarized, then the brightness will rise and fall. Brightness when the filter aligns with the polarization, dimmest when the filter is at a right angle to the polarization. Repeating the measurement across a swath of the sky will reveal the patterns of polarizations. There are two types of polarization patterns. One is called an E mode for electric because it is the analog of electric fields emanating from a charged particle. Previous observations have detected E modes in the primordial microwaves generated by the variations in the universe's density. The other polarization pattern possesses a characteristic found in magnetic fields. Because physics uses the letter B as the symbol to designate magnetic fields, it is known as the B mode. They look like squirrels, Dr. Spergel said. The gravitational waves would have shaken electrons in a way to generate tiny B modes in the cosmic microwaves. Detection, that will be a Nobel Prize, said Gregory Gabadaz, a professor of physics at New York University and senior vice president for physics at the Simon Foundation. Never mind the Nobel Prize. The discovery is such a magnitude, who cares what prize you give it? The microwave measurements could uncover other major physics phenomena too, including the masses of ghostly particles known as neutrinos, or identify dark matter, the mysterious particles that account for 85% of the mass of the universe. Perhaps the biggest challenge is for the cosmologists not to fool themselves. That is exactly what happened a decade ago when scientists working on an experiment known as BICEP-2, background imaging of cosmic extragalactic polarization, announced that they had found the smoking gun of primordial gravitation waves and cosmic inflation. But within a year, the claim fell apart. The observed microwaves had not come from the Big Bang and inflation, but rather from dust within our own Milky Way galaxy. To avoid repeating that mistake, Simons Observatory will make its observations at several wavelengths. BICEP-2's findings relied on only one wavelength. One of the telescopes at the Simons Foundation will be devoted to detecting interstellar dust, which radiates at higher temperatures. That signal will then be subtracted, which Rose researchers hope will just leave the cosmic microwave background. It's worth it for us to guard against having a repeat of the fiasco that hurt us before, Dr. Keating said. If that would happen again, I don't think anyone would ever trust this field. In the aftermath of the BICEP-2 controversies, Dr. Simons convince competing research groups to work together at the Simons Observatory. I joke that he is basically forcing a merger, leveraging his experience in the hedge fund world, Dr. Keating said. The Simons Foundation may still fail to find what it is looking for, or the data may be ambiguous. Perhaps spurious emissions from dust will turn out to be a bigger problem than expected, obscuring the primordial B modes. It's like looking at New York City through a dirty window, Dr. Keating said. Nature doesn't have a contract with us to produce an observable signal. Or maybe there are not any B modes at all. That would delight contrarian cosmologists who dislike the idea of cosmic inflation. One of the seemingly unavoidable consequences of inflation is the multiverse, that the universe continually diverges into an infinity of alternative possibilities. Literally, every possible arrangement of matter and space and time and energy occurs in this cosmic landscape called the multiverse, Dr. Keating said. Some people find that very attractive, and other people find it distasteful. However, all the alternatives predict exactly zero B modes. Thus, a successful detection would rule them out. It still won't prove inflation, Dr. Keating said, but it would narrow down the culprits from 4 or 5 to 1. If the Simons Observatory does not detect any B modes, that would definitely not disprove cosmic inflation. But it would make it harder to twist theoretical models in a way to produce B modes small enough to not be detectable. Inflationary paradigm will be in great trouble, Dr. Gabbardads said. The majority will abandon it, and we will be looking for alternatives to inflation. Indeed, Dr. Keating said. Dr. Simons, an eminent mathematician before switching to the world of finance, was among those who would have been happy to see inflation tossed into the trash bin of disproved scientific hypotheses. That would then comport with his notion of an eternal, cyclical, or bouncing model for the universe, Dr. Keating said. But Dr. Simons was also willing to invest the money to find out if he could be proven wrong. His real love was in science, Dr. Keating said. And return to our next story, which says Kilauea volcano erupts on Hawaii's Big Island. The volcano erupted 3 times in 2023. There did not appear to be any imminent danger to residents recently. The story is by Victor Mather. Kilauea, the most active volcano in Hawaii, began erupting early this past week. Kilauea in the southeast part of the Big Island erupted three times last year. Because the eruption was happening near the summit, there did not appear to be any imminent danger to residents. The eruption began at 12:30 a.m. local time. Magma was rising from beneath the surface and fountaining up through cracks, the United States Geological Survey said, rather than the hundreds of feet you might expect in a classic major volcanic eruption. Michael Poland, a geophysicist with the USGS, said the lava at Kilauea was rising only tens of feet. In 2023, Kilauea erupted in January, June, and September. A major eruption in 2018 destroyed 700 homes. From 1983 to 2018, all the activity came from two vents, Mr. Poland said. Since 2018, it has gone away from a period of steady eruptions. Now it has discrete, usually shortish eruptions happening in several different places. Now we're getting eruptions happening in places we haven't seen in 50 years. Recent eruptions have typically lasted 6 to 8 hours. Unlike 2018, when lava was coming out in people's backyards, these are in the national park, Mr. Poland said, referring to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. The volcano alert level was raised this past week to a warning from a watch, the normal move when an eruption starts. Scientists have been watching for an eruption for about 250 earthquakes were recorded beneath Kilauea's summit over an 8-hour period before the eruption. Earthquakes are sometimes a precursor to eruption. The strongest quake was a magnitude 4.1 trembler at 9:12 p.m., about 3 hours before the eruption. The USGS said that during Kilauea's eruptions, volcanic gas, including sulfur dioxide, is released. That gas reacts in the atmosphere to create volcanic smog, or VOG. VOG creates the potential for an airborne health hazard to residents and visitors, damages to agricultural crops and other plants, and affects livestock, the agency said. It's more of an irritant, Mr. Poland said. If people have sensitive breathing or respiratory issues, they may find it more difficult to breathe. Mr. Poland said after the initial eruptions, the activity was starting to wane as of 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We wouldn't expect this one to be a terribly long eruption, he said. And in our next story, from 700 A.D., a pre-Viking vessel rises into view. On the Norwegian island of Leka, archaeologists have found unearthed the earliest known ship burial in Scandinavia. The story is by Fran Lids. For hundreds of years, Norwegians thought they knew who or what had been interred in an enormous barrow on the island of Leka, which is just off the country's northern coast facing the Atlantic Ocean. The grassy hillock is named for King Harlog, a 9th century Viking monarch who, if the Norse folklore is to be believed, had himself and 11 companions buried alive rather than face certain defeat by a rival ruler. The story of mass suicide has been regarded as potentially factual since the late 1700s, when three tunnels were bored into the burial mound, revealing nails, animal bones, a bronze cauldron, and a seated skeleton with a sword. The human remains, notionally identified as Herlog, were exhibited with other artifacts from the barrow for a time at the nearby Trondheim Cathedral School, before disappearing altogether in the early 1920s and leaving an unresolved puzzle. Evidently, the cauldron was metalled down into shoe buckles. Last summer, archaeologists and a metal detectorist conducted a small survey of the Mjøs on behalf of the Norwegian Directorate for Cultural Heritage. They were attempting to determine whether the barrow, originally 41 feet high and 230 feet in diameter, harbored a ship, as scholars had long suspected. We know very little about what these large mounds contained because hardly any of them have been investigated, said Geir Grønningsby, an archaeologist at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, who supervised the dig. The researchers dug three shallow trenches at the site and unearthed wood fragments and iron planking rivets that were thought to have once been part of a ship. Although the vessel had largely rotted away, radiocarbon dating of the wood around some of the rivets and two architectural and two charcoal layers high up in the mound indicated that the burial occurred about 700 AD, making it the earliest known example of a ship burial in Scandinavia. We do not know if the ship was ocean-going, meaning that it crossed over the North Sea to England, Dr. Grønningsby said, but it had a maritime competence that allowed it to go along the coast to the continent. The ship's grave predates the Viking Age, which lasted from 793 AD to 1066 AD by several generations, scuttling the theory that the site, known as Herlogsskogen, was the final resting place of King Herlog and his suicide squad. But the find established that the 8th century inhabitants of the north central coast were skilled seafarers who could build big ships, Dr. Grønningsby said. It also challenged historical narratives by pushing back the tradition of vessel graves in Norway, aligning it with such spectacular early examples as the boat burials at Valsgard in the Swedish province of Uppland and the ship burial at Sottenhoe in the county of Suffolk, England. Archaeologists differentiate between Old Norse boats and ships based on length, but they don't agree on where to draw the line. Some say 39 feet, others say 46 feet. Valsgard today is a farm near the Fyris River, and from the 6th to the 11th centuries it hosted a series of burials in boats equipped with all the necessities a great warrior required in the afterlife: cooking gear, horses, ornate shields, helmets, weapons, feather beds, and pillows. The Sottenhoe encompasses about 20 burial mounds, one of which includes the imprint of an 89-foot-long clinker-built rowing boat from the 7th century. Historians generally agree that Sottenhoe was the cemetery for the royal dynasty of East Anglia, the Wuffengots, and that the ship burial in Mound 1 commemorated the death in 624 AD of Raedwald, an Anglo-Saxon king who converted to Christianity. Albeit not with complete conviction, he kept the shrine with altars to both Christ and the pagan god. Mound 2, damaged by looters, may have held his son or nephew, and possibly a small boat. Jan Bill, who is the curator of the Viking ship collection at the University of Oslo, and who was not involved with the Herlogsskogen project, said that if the timeline holds up, the results will be part of a growing amount of evidence that use of ship symbolism in royal burials started already back in the late 6th or 7th century in Scandinavia, even if the earliest examples in Norway far date back to only the 8th century. Norway abounds in grave mounds. A 2017 study determined that nearly 2,300 such mounds are wider than 66 feet at the base. Some, like the one that used to stand at another site in Inderøy, had a fairy tale-like mystique. Legend has it that a king conquered Inderøy in battle and installed a dog named Sauz on the throne. The locals used magic to instill the knowledge of three wise men into the animal, whose enchanted, if not enlightened, rule lasted for years. When the dog eventually met its maker, it was buried in a barrel called Saxhaug, Norwegian for Sauer's Mount. Dog barrels seem to have been less common than boat barrels, which were once a fairly standard funerary structure throughout Scandinavia, where the deceased were laid in vessels and given grave offerings in keeping with their social status. Heaps of stone and soil were typically placed atop corpses to create barrows. Dr. Grønsby said that many of the ancient Norway's monumental mounds were built for the power elite as symbols of wealth and prestige, and located in places where passers-by couldn't miss them. Herlogshagen, situated on the coast, was a key stop in the trade of goods to mainland Europe, and visible to everyone who sailed past it. We can probably say that the mounds were built to show off greatness and that the ship was linked to religious ideas about life after death, Dr. Grønsvig said. The ship was a means of transport to the underworld. The Herlogshagen discovery throws new light on the Merovingian period, which lasted from roughly 550 to 793 and was the precursor to the Viking Age. It remains a remarkably hazy area of the region's history, despite having set off the ship burial craze, which has yielded few archaeological relics. In Norway, many of today's farms are in the same spots they occupied 1,400 years ago. However, we have carried out few excavations of farmyards, Dr. Grønsby said. What have been excavated are large, multifunctional Scandinavian longhouses like the ones in the epic Old English poem, Beowulf, which opens with a description of how Skifling, the mythical first king of the Danes, was laid out in a richly furnished funeral boat cast off into the sea from where he had come. In these halls are often so-called gold foil figures, small gold plates with pagan motifs, Dr. Grønsby said. Often the plates depict a woman with a cup and a man facing each other. Similar decorative plates with larger and more saber-rattling designs were found on helmets at Valsgard and Suttenhoo. These motifs are usually interpreted in the light of Norse mythology, Dr. Grønsby said. Herlogshagen's bronze cauldron was discovered during the first excavation in 1755, when the mound was thought to contain the remnants of a giant named Herlo. Little is known about the ship presumed to have been buried there, although the rivets recently discovered suggest it was probably comparable in length to two 9th-century ships, the Oseberg and the Gokstad, 71 and 78 feet long, respectively, found in burial mounds in Vestfold, Norway. The first excavation of Herlingshagen in 1755 found a hole that went right through the mound, Dr. Grønsby said. In light of this legend, this was interpreted as an air vent. The current theory proposed that the hole was the imprint of the mast, and that in any event, the ship was interred in the mound at least 150 years before the royal embedment supposedly took place. And that's all the time we have for today. This has been Rick Anderson reading selected stories from the June 5th, 2024 edition of the New York Times Science section. Thanks for listening. Hey, let's do this again next week.